so many people have come and told me that they have done so much work to learn to understand what happened to them and why it had that impact on them, and to understand the people who hurt them and why would they do that. And then I come along and I'm like, but let's talk about your biology and let's not talk about the past. Let's talk about what's happening right now still in your body. Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. This is a special episode because I get interviewed on things I don't normally get asked. I share stories I haven't shared anywhere else about my keto diet disaster in surgery residency, how I discovered that I had all three biochemical imbalances, and about why I rewrote this book 7 times. If you haven't pre-ordered it yet, now is the time. Head over to biologytrauma.com/book, and you'll get the first 3 chapters now, plus my 5-day nervous system reset with somatic exercises. Here's a quick teaser on why you should pre-order the book now so you can get the 3 chapters and start reading them now.
I have read all 3 chapters the minute I got them. The wonderful part for me is the information, as people have said, it just comes across so clearly, but it also gives me a language to explain myself, my trauma, my experience to others. And that's something that I haven't been able to do before.
I have to say, I was a little bit surprised by the fact that how much more and how much deeper I was able to understand things after reading those first 3 chapters. Being a mental health counselor, to share more on a deeper level with my clients as well, those 3 chapters have done that and giving me that opportunity already to do that. How you write is so amazing because it's so in-depth, it's detailed, and yet it's so grounded and so available on a more obviously lay person's level. You're just such a real person. And that comes through in your writing, Dr. Amy. It really, really did. So I'm just so, so excited to get to read the rest of it and to share the book with others as well. So
again, if you want the first 3 chapters to read now, you can. Just go to biologyoftrauma.com/book, order your copy, and there you will have the 3 chapters and my 5-day nervous system reset. Now let's get started with this interview. My friend and colleague, Stephen Wright, has his whole business, Healthy Gut, based on nervous system dysregulation from his own story. He gets the somatic work, the parts work, the biology, the capacity, the overwhelm. So I will have links to his story and store in the show notes. But here's Stephen interviewing me.
All right. So the biology of trauma, you've worked very hard. Maybe this is your life's work up until now.
Up until now, absolutely. And this was a lot of work to take everything that I've learned and to say what would be the most important to share with people and how to share it with them, which is why I rewrote this thing 7 times. This is the 8th edition of this book. And what I mean by that is, you know how you write the whole thing and then you throw it all in the trash and you start from scratch? That's what I mean by rewriting it 7 times, because how do you take so much that you've learned and experienced and seen and present it in a way that is organized and cohesive and shares the most important things for a person to know about their body and their nervous system?
I am grateful that you went through 7 drafts, and I hope that readers are going to be grateful, because I do think it's the next evolution. It's the transcendent include of the various works in the trauma space, but also in the, I would say, like the medical, functional medicine, integrative medical space. I think that's one of the things I didn't know about you. We've interacted a decent amount over the last few years, but I didn't know how Western medicine you started, because you come off so grounded and so accepting these days. And that's not often a feeling I have with a physician. And I think that's one of the reasons why I said what I said, where we're like transcending, including the works of your mentors and that whole field, and bringing in the cell danger response, the various systems of systems inside of functional medicine and testing over there. Because I think this is one of the things that's been really missing out there, is someone who is willing to say, and it's not like you said it this way, but I'm saying it this way, whether it was the chicken or the egg, it doesn't really matter. You have to do both.
And that's exactly right. And I love that's what comes across in the book for you. where I'm just building on what we've already known. I'm not creating something new. I'm not saying, forget all of that, and here's a new approach, a new model. It's taking all of those different pieces and saying, this is how they all come together. And here's what you need to know about then the emotional aspect, but also the cellular aspect. And as you say, chicken or egg, it doesn't matter because we're here. This is the problem. And this is how we navigate our bodies once we are here at this place where we've been storing trauma.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that. And I love it because I don't know what your experience is, but my experience is that people, our minds actually, our brains, I think, are actually wired to fixate on a certain issue. Like we're actually pre-wired to do this. I'll speak from my experience. I can get extraordinarily fixated on something. For instance, when I read about the ACEs studies and the work of the ACEs project years ago, I was so interested in how many did I have and how could you interpret these questions such that I could get more to then I could finally have the two or above. Was I really in that category? And I've done that a number of times where I get really fixated on something, looking for a label or looking for the answer or the miracle, only to be left floating, like wondering, did I just waste my time, really? And so I do find a lot of the prior trauma work, other than the underlying foundations, it often left me feeling like that. What? Okay, cool. Now I know this. Now I know that it impacts me. Now what? And I'm very grateful that I feel like you tried to take on that project.
And I'll add to that because I've had so many people come through my courses and they've said then that because they had a high ACE score, which yes, they also obsessively calculated, because they had a high ACE score, that means that this is what I can expect in life. I can expect to be sick. I can expect to die earlier than other people. I can expect these things. And it's almost like they accepted and settled for that. Whereas I come in and I'm saying, but there's so much that we can do because now that we know the science, it gives us the sequence, it gives us the tools, it gives us the ability to repair those damaging aspects of previous traumas and not have to continue to live under their impact like so many people are doing still. That brings up another thought that I have around so many people have come and told me that they have done so much work to learn to understand what happened to them and why it had that impact on them and to understand the people who hurt them and why would they do that. And there's been so much investment on their part to understand the situation, the event, and the people. And then I come along and I'm like, but let's talk about your biology and let's not talk about the past. Let's talk about what's happening right now still in your body. And they're telling me, I feel like I understand so much that my mind has been healed. I can recognize when I'm not holding up my boundaries well. I can recognize when I'm allowing toxic people into my life. So my mind has healed, but my body still hasn't. And that for me was another really important aspect for the book is, if you're still living under the impact of the past in your physical health, that is still not yet true freedom. There's still another layer to go.
Yeah, I think that's really common. That seems like a really common trajectory. It's one that I took for a while as well, of really trying to map the past and trying to understand, why do I have gaps in my memory? Is that just because I'm a boy, I'm a man, and we have weird memory stuff versus girls? And did something happen in those gaps? Or why am I the way I am? And really, at the end of that, I was just left in the same spot of, yeah, I have a bigger map, but like, I'm still experiencing emotional turmoil. I'm still not sleeping the way I want to sleep. My gut is still sensitive. And so I think one of the things that's really powerful about the work that you're doing, and I'm going to put some words in your mouth, so please correct them and see if I got it right. So this is like my take on the book after going through it, is that I think what you're saying is the most efficient path, if you wanted to either overcome your physical problems, whatever they might be, or your mental problems, whatever you might have there, would be to go on parallel tracks at the same time, where you are supporting your cellular tissue, organ, body biology through certain testing and supplements and food, as well as creating a home for yourself to feel safe mentally and emotionally and doing that work. And that's really the quickest way for actual true like 360 healing.
100%. And thank you for capturing that essence of the book. It's this idea that the more that we can create the container, then the more that we can create these shifts. If we're only coming at it from one side, our healing is going to be lopsided. It's like having a stool and trying to balance with just the one approach or the one tool that we're trying to use. Whereas when we can come in and we can say, no, it's emotional, it's psychological, and it's biological. And let's do one step for each of those. But because it's each of those, it's really creating the container that allows for the balanced growth and development.
You and I have had talks about the word capacity before. When it comes to when people come to you, when they come to your courses, when they're coming to this book, how do you define capacity and how does it relate to their ability to actually make change that they want?
The capacity is everything. And I see this as being the crux of the message in the book is we each have a capacity. And whenever our capacity is exceeded, whether that's because it's being exceeded by the psychological pressure that we're on or the emotional environment that we're in. I shared with you before we hit that record button of an experience I had where the emotions were so much more than my capacity and my body got physically ill. But then there is the physical capacity and we have a capacity. And how full is that? Is it burdened down with toxins, with oxidative stress? That is also going to decrease your capacity. But at the end of the day, it all comes down into one simple equation of, and what is your total capacity? That will be your capacity for the psychological activities that you want to do, whether teach a course or present or write. All of those are psychological tasks. And what is your capacity to even be able to do those, to be present, to be focused? What about the emotions? Do you even have the capacity to hold hard emotions, big emotions, positive emotions like love, joy, and connection? Do you even have the capacity for that? Do you have the capacity to jog and exercise, run a marathon, or is your capacity so low it's enough for you just to get out of bed every day? We all have this capacity and it's on all the levels. One capacity, psychological, emotional, and physical. And knowing then that given our state of our nervous system, our capacity changes from moment to moment, which is why we can't even do a check-in with our body once a day and then be like, I already listened to my body. I'm good. It's like your inner world and physiology and capacity is so dynamic. It's changing from second to second. And so that's really the starting place for the healing journey is even being able to hear your body's messages from moment to moment so that you can provide different support based on the dynamic changes that are happening and its meaning to your nervous system.
So has it been your experience then that people who don't make the changes they want to make, say in the emotional or psychological workshops or world, is it because their biology capacity is holding them back?
That is usually the case. It is definitely their capacity that's holding them back. And the biology is often the missing piece that they haven't known to address. And so that's then their biggest block. That was what shocked me is that even as a physician who thought that she knew the body on such an intimate level, because I've been inside the body doing surgery. I've been taking care of ICU people. I've been at bedsides of people as they pass. Like I thought I knew the body. And yet to start my own trauma work and have to realize that my own biology was holding me back from making the progress that I wanted to. And it was aspects of my biology that I wasn't even aware of. Brain inflammation, biochemical imbalances. I wasn't taught this stuff in medical school. And it was so eye-opening that as a physician, I could get lost and held back on my trauma healing journey. And if I could, then other people must be
also in that same position. And so that was my message around, here is the biology, which is one of the biggest blocks to our progress in trauma work.
I love that. And I want to go one more layer deeper because I can't resist. And I guess I'll ask maybe from your perspective, I think we both can agree we're meaning-making machines, right? And I talked a little bit earlier about how we can get fixated on certain topics or certain ideas, and then we can make meaning about everything is from that one lens of meaning-making. For you, how did you figure out, because you were probably making a lot of meaning about not making progress, and maybe this symptom or this inability, how did you finally allow yourself to come up with a different meaning that maybe it's your biology that's holding you back and not something psychologically or emotionally?
It was so ingrained in me to think about it in terms of psychological mindset that I started in 12-step groups. I started even attending Overeaters Anonymous to try to deal with the behavior of binge eating and emotional eating once I recognized that I was doing. That's how programmed I was to think of all of this as it's just a choice. It's a decision. It's a mindset. It's your willpower, Amy.
It's your willpower, yeah.
And believe me, I was white-knuckling it all along. And that was one of the first shifts for me that told me, I think it's something different than willpower. The first thing that I tried, and I didn't put this story in the book, the first thing that I tried was going on a keto diet in order to lose weight. So I did share in my book that in 2014, when I had my major health crash, couldn't get out of bed one morning, I was overweight and was on 2 mood medications for depression and anxiety. It bothered me so much to be overweight that what I had done was gone on a keto diet, because what the news is telling me is that the keto diet is the fastest way to lose weight. So I'm like, sign me up, baby. So I sign up and I get my meal packages in the mail as a resident, right? Like, I'm on a limited resources for my revenue. And so for me to invest money in like all of these meals that were being delivered, and it's like, okay, Amy, this is all you can eat. This is it. You can't eat anything else. This is what you're eating. And it threw me into anxiety, panic attacks, fatigue. And that was when I really started looking at, what is it about what I'm eating that's causing me to have these emotional experiences of deeper depression, of deeper shame and burnout, and this shutdown response that I talk about in the book. And realizing that I could shift that with food really helped me start to see, I think there's something biological here. That was the very first step. And then over the years, then I actually ran into Dr. Karazian's book, Why Your Brain Isn't Working. And I was like, yeah, why isn't my brain working? So I read his book and I learn about brain inflammation, and I learn about what causes the priming of the microglia or those immune cells in the brain. And I was like, yeah, I've had all of those head injuries. I've had the whiplash. I've had the concussions. Oh my goodness. I think that's the reason for my brain fog and this decision fatigue. And isn't this interesting that it seems to be triggered by certain foods? And so then I started to bring that piece in. And one of the last pieces was the biochemical imbalances. And that came after a car accident that I had in 2017. And I was not recovering from that car accident. I was actually progressing into chronic pain and back into the weight gain and the fatigue and the depression. And I was like, we have worked too hard. And that was when I came across the nutritional support and protocols for mental health. And I thought, this is interesting. I'm addiction medicine practitioner by then. So I was coming at the lens of, this will be great information as a practitioner, not realizing, Stephen, that I was going to have all three of the most common biochemical imbalances, all three of them. No wonder I was struggling so hard. And now with that lens, I could look back on my childhood and form very different meanings around what happened and my experience with those, because I could see now I was struggling with pyroluria, for example. I was struggling with pyroluria as a 3-year-old when I started to have headaches and migraines in the classroom. Everyone else seemed to be fine. I was struggling. And the amount of willpower that I had to use to overcome that and still pull the A's, because I needed to be perfect and bring those A's home for my parents. But the amount of energy and willpower that it took for me to override my biochemistry is something that I did when I was young. But as I got older, my body's, I don't have that capacity. I can't do that anymore. So being able to see then the experiences that I would have and now be able to create a new meaning for those based on what I was learning about the biology that had made me susceptible to overwhelm and trauma responses.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. There are so many directions I want to go. I think one of them is this sort of shared experience I think many of us have. Like I have it in my own ways in my healing journey of like, it's only when there's a drastic change, like when you drastically changed your diet and you also didn't have the resources to just drastically change back, you had to go all in on this. And then you didn't get the result you wanted. It went the opposite way, which is actually brilliant feedback, which is the moment I think of some of our biggest changes are when we take a big swing and we learn something. It either goes well or it doesn't go well. The worst thing is nothing happens. Then you're like, now what? But do you find that in the people, your students, the people you interact with in the trauma space, do you find that they're willing to take the swings that are needed to learn more about either it's biology or not or something else?
I think that this has been something that I learned as a physician. Not as much when I was in surgery, but especially when I became an addiction medicine physician. And I saw that I could be available to help people detox off of their substance and create a better life for themselves. But until they wanted it, there was nothing that I could do except let them know that when they were ready, I'm here. I find the same thing in the aspect of stored trauma in the body. And the sad thing about human nature is that the pain of staying the same has to become so bad that we're willing to undergo the pain of change. And whether we're talking about addictions or whether we're talking about our responses to stress, to challenges, to lack of good sleep, to lack of good relationships, whatever that is, however that's showing up for people, it's still true that until the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of change, we won't make that change. We won't take that action. We'll stay the same. Continue to try to do what we've done because we're thinking, I just need to try it one more time. Let me try it this other way. Let me try this new thing. We rationalize so much until that pain becomes so great. We're willing to undergo the pain of change because change is painful. Change is hard. Change does take energy. It's not easy. I create a clear path, but it's still not. It takes change. It takes the energy. It takes that pain. So yeah, being able to watch people and see at what point does that change for them? At what point are they now motivated that when I even offer my course, that they don't feel it as, oh, you're just trying to sell something to me. If that's their experience, their pain of staying the same is not yet big enough. Once that pain is big enough, the opportunity to work with me, the opportunity to take courses, the opportunity to do something about it becomes an easy decision. Absolutely, yes, I'm all in because I can see that what I've tried is not enough, is not getting down to that nervous system and cellular level where I really need to create that level of safety. It's not just trying to create safety in the confines of my mind. It's also in my cells.
I think that's absolutely true in my experience of this life. And that's so frustrating that it has to be that way. But you perfectly led where I was hoping we might get to, which is I'm a big believer in mathematics and seeing the world through some math. And I know that's super nerdy and boring for most folks, but I hope it will give an insight, which is my experience in gut healing, in my own healing journeys, even in the trauma, my trauma walks and emotional and spiritual healing has been very much governed by the law of diminishing returns. And to me, what you just highlighted there, and I want to see if you agree with this, is that there's a mathematical principle that basically says it's the amount of effort it takes you to get to, say, 80% of the outcome of, say, doing cognitive behavioral therapy or neurofeedback, like the results, is relatively easy in that one narrow field. Like the amount of money and time it takes, you will get 80% of the results in a quicker, cheaper pace. But then to get the last 20% that's available from that healing modality, it's extraordinarily time consuming and expensive. And it gets worse and worse the farther you go. So like to go the last 5% takes the longest and costs the most in energy and money. And I'm always trying to get people to realize when they're thinking and making meaning in certain directions where I'm like, you've been going in this pathway for long enough. Whether you think it's food, whether you think food is medicine, you've been going down this food thing for so long. Just give it up and walk away. Go in any other direction. You will make such faster progress. And I feel like that's something you're describing. Is that true?
That's exactly what this is. And again, it's almost like being able to take what I've shared and be able to apply it to these greater aspects of life, where now let's not just talk about trauma. Let's not talk about trauma. Forget the word trauma. Let's just talk about change. Let's talk about grief. Let's talk about loss. Let's talk about life. Let's talk about stress. Because when we're talking about the nervous system and I'm laying out the physiology of these different states, a person can now know what state am I in any given moment and how is that going to shape who I am right now? How is that going to shape how I respond to this person, this situation right now? How is this going to influence what the next stress is that life brings me and how I'm going to be? Am I going to be able to be the person that I want to be? Am I going to be able to show up in the way that I want to show up in the world? That's all what shows up in our nervous system. And being able to bring it back down to this subconscious equation that guides everything that we do every moment, whether it's the thoughts that we have, the emotions that we feel, or the physical sensations that we have. It's what is my perception of the size of danger in my life right now? What is the perception?
Brilliant question.
And I will tell you that so often I found myself creating bigger sizes of danger than actually were the reality. But in my mind, I could play out stories and I could say, oh, this person emailed me and they're upset with me. And this means that no one will like me. This means that everyone will see what I've done and I'll be embarrassed. And that means that I'll die alone, homeless on the streets with no friends. Like my brain can so quickly project this story. And all that happened was someone emailed me and said, hey, I think you could have done that better. It's a molehill and it's a small problem that I can respond to. Thank you for the feedback. I really appreciate you being willing to say that to me because that's a true friend that will say that and in such a loving way, for example. But I had taken that molehill and made this huge, insurmountable mountain. And that's what my body's responding to. My body's now thinking of me dying alone, homeless, without any friends. And it sees that as the problem. And it's, we don't have the capacity to handle that. We should just shut down and go into shame. And so this idea that our capacity is not being measured up against our reality, it's being measured up against our perceptions of ourselves. Am I capable? And our perception of the size of danger that we've created something to be in our mind.
I need to ask that question on a more regular basis because I am very guilty of amplifying the amount of danger in my life because that also makes me very successful. I can use all that fear to drive into action, which then, of course, I get totally tired by Wednesday and crash on Thursday, barely get through Friday. But anyways, that's a little bit too much about me. But I wanted to ask, going deeper, I think there's this perception. I don't know if it's true, but I feel like there's this perception in trauma work that this is going to be like a really long process. Like this is going to take your whole lifetime, basically. If you're lucky, you might figure it out. I'm wondering how you see that when someone, Like, how fast can someone actually make progress if they're supporting all three legs of the stool?
I think this was the question that I started out. In fact, I remember coming out of that experience with my own health issue and realizing how connected it was to my stored trauma that I hadn't even realized that I was storing. I didn't know if I could get better, Stephen. I didn't know if, like many people have told me, this was just the life that I now had to accept. And so that's where I started, not knowing if there was a path, not knowing if there was a better future for me. And as I'm piecing this together then, and I'm seeing that, no, that it is possible, then my next question becomes, then how can I help others get there faster than what it took me to figure this all out? And I started experimenting with my patients. And I started experimenting with different things that I had learned. So they'd come in, they'd have their session and talk with me, and I'd do a little somatic work. Be like, what is this going to do? Is this going to help them? And I started using my patients as a way for me to try things out to see, how does this help you? Does it shift things faster than what we have been doing, where all I'm doing is prescribing a medication with my pen rather than actually doing some of these other elements into your treatment protocol? And the results were shocking me. Again, I'm coming from a very medical background where it's all about the evidence and the research and the studies and the numbers. And so I am very familiar with how long does it take a medication to really work, and what does it work on, and what are the side effects then? So we can't go too high on the dose because it'll cause the side effects to go up. So this is how my brain is operating, and I don't have much hope because all I've seen is, well, things take a while to really start working. And then when they do start working, it comes with side effects. And then we have to manage side effects. So then it becomes this complicated thing where now you're on this medication and this medication because this medication is for the side effects of this medication. And so to be able to see, like, I can bring in these elements of inner child work, somatic self-practices. And if done the right way, and that's a very important principle of my book, if done the right way in the right order, there are no side effects unless you're counting joy, sense of connection, and better sleep as side effects. Then yes, there are side effects. And they're working faster than any other medication or supplement or treatment that I've been using. And it's not only working faster, it's working on multiple domains. And so I'm used to having a medication for one thing, a medication for depression. But what if I can teach you this sequence of somatic self-practices that you're going to continue to do on your own at home? And not only is it going to help you with your depression, 30% decrease in your depression, but it's also going to decrease your anxiety. It's also going to help you sleep better. It's also going to improve those GI symptoms that you have. It's also going to increase your energy. It's also going to give you a sense of joy and a sense of community. Would you like to learn this? And my patients were like, yes, because it's working on all of these things. And that is why they work so fast, because we're at the nervous system level. We're going to truly what is driving all of those things rather than trying to treat each of the downstream effects separately. And so as then I put that together for being able to teach other people who are not my patients, but now people around the world, being able to teach them, this is how to get the fastest results in a safe way, because we are following the sequence of what the body actually needs to feel safe to open up. And that's what a lot of people have missed, is that they expect their body to open up and heal without having created the safety to open up. If their body had already felt safe, it would have already opened up all of this stuff and let all of these emotions and trauma go. It's hasn't felt safe. And that's why the body has not already done this by itself already. And so that's the first step, is not just saying, okay, I need to open things up. No, please don't open things up. It will make things worse. That was one of the experiences that I had. I'm going to trauma work and it's making things worse. Even my physical health, my autoimmunity was making it worse because it was stirring things up without bringing the resolution, because I wasn't doing things in the right order, in the right sequence. And so this idea of, no, we actually don't start with, okay, feel the fear and do it anyway. Like, no, that's the stupidest advice that you can give somebody for their trauma work. Feel the fear, respect it, and say, how do I create the safety so that there isn't that level of fear? So that then there is this opening up in a way that's titrated, it's pacing at our current capacity so that I'm not getting overwhelmed and I can actually create a new experience of healing and feeling and not just getting overwhelmed that I'm needing to numb it and shove it back down where it came from.
I think it was safety and the
what's safety, the support, and then expansion.
Yeah. It seems absolutely essential. And if you're going to, when you buy the book, you're going to buy the book. And when you do, make sure you reread that section. I'm going to go reread that section as well. When it comes to the book, maybe even you could project onto me, you could pick up on something for me. What do you think I'm misunderstanding about it that you'd love for me to get?
This is so hard because as we started this conversation, it was this idea of how do I take everything that I've learned and how can I narrow it down to this is the most important thing to know? And that's why I wrote the book in three different sections, because each section then has the most important thing for you to know. And when I look at section one, I think the most important thing that I would want readers to know is that there is a difference between stress and trauma in your body. And if something makes you sick, that is not stress. Let's call it for what it is. That is your body having gone into a trauma response. That's section one. Section two, this is where I wanted the reader to understand, why does your body hold on to that? Why can't we just leave it in the past? Why can't we just move on? And we can feel like we've moved on psychologically, but then again, many people tell me that, but my body is still being affected. So how do we actually move on when our body has been holding on? And so the most important thing that I would want people to know from section two is this idea that's where our own biology keeps us stuck, because it creates this biology that now is a source of danger and is creating signals of danger to our nervous system so that our nervous system says, I'm always in danger. And it's not because of the people, places, and things outside of me, though it may also be that. It's also because I have this oxidative damage that's happening. I have this inflammation that's happening. I have this gut sensitivity and inflammation in the mast cells and the histamine. I've got this adrenaline. It's our own biology that keeps us stuck in this cycling between stress state and overwhelm. And so for anyone who recognizes that their nervous system seems to just loop between feeling stressed and then feeling overwhelmed, stressed and overwhelmed, this is the section for you to understand why. So that then in section three, this is where we give the framework, the map, the sequence, and the tools that a person will need for the healing journey. I give that all to them. Give them the map. This is the framework that you're going to use. These are the tools you're going to use and in which order, so that people can actually make the progress that they want and not find themselves still trying hard, but not actually seeing the change that they want in their life, in their relationships, in their health.
Wonderful. I don't know if I got that. So thank you for clarifying. So there was an open loop for me that didn't get closed, because the book starts off with this really intense line about your son, Miguel. And I had to read the whole book to get to some sort of closure, but I didn't get the closure I was looking for. So if you're willing to share, how is Miguel, or how is your relationship with Miguel? Is he alive?
So for context for the reader, I start the book with a rocking chair moment. And this moment was something that I did not expect and something that was so hurtful and so shocking that it became the portal for me to really find out what I was missing when it came to Miguel. For those who haven't read the book yet, Miguel came to me as a foster child at 4 years old. And around his fifth birthday, I adopted him. And I'm going to make you read the book to know the quote and to know exactly what he said to me.
It's a big deal, though. It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's shocking for most people because we don't want to think that a young child would already be thinking those kinds of things. And so what you're asking for the end of the story, the rest of the story, I had the privilege of being Miguel's mom for 6 years. When I adopted him, I was a single mom in medical school, and I had not been planning to adopt. I had been planning to foster parent. But as I came to understand Miguel's situation and his history, and the social worker telling me that if he didn't make it with me, he would be in a group home for the rest of his life, starting at age 4, I so struggled with that I made the very hard and bold decision to adopt as a single mom. I threw myself in at that point to find the answers for him, since therapies were not working, time was not healing, and clearly my love was not enough. I thought at that point that I was going to be his forever mom. That was my heart behind it. I was all in. In 2014 was when things changed. Now, the great news is that I did find all of the pieces that he needed at that time. And he went from that boy in that rocking chair moment to a very different son who actually wanted connection with me and could express his love and affection for me. And I can't begin to describe how that felt for me as a mom to have invested this many years into him and to finally have that relationship that I had always dreamed of having with him. And life is not always going to go the way that we want it to go. And what happened was that things quickly became too much for me, given my schedule as a resident, given I'm still a single mom. And I made the very hard decision to find him another home that would have two parents, a mom and a dad. He would have siblings. He'd be able to have all of what I could not provide him. And in that process, I chose a family that I had actually worked with and helped teach them the attachment parenting for their children. So I knew them well. And I took 2 weeks off and went and did this transition for Miguel. Stephen, it was the most painful thing I have ever been through. I still remember moments along those 2 weeks when his pain would surface and he was struggling with this idea that he had to love a different mom now. And it broke my heart so much to realize that I was not supposed to be his forever mom. I was just the mom to get him out of the foster care system. And that was when my physical health just collapsed. I came back from that experience so heartbroken. And as I had to jump back into residency, it was not just residency, it was transplant surgery rotation. Oof. And for those of you who know anything about transplant surgery, there is no night, there is no day. Transplants come in at all times. I was also the one going out to harvest the organs after there had been a car accident or something. So I was literally up all the time. My very first shift, I worked 30 hours straight. We did 3 kidney transplants in a row, and I had no time to feel my feelings. And I found myself stuffing them, numbing them, to do whatever I had to do to just be able to keep up with work. And my body was so heavy with the grief that it said, I can't do this. So that was then what precipitated my autoimmunity, my chronic fatigue. And that was then what led me to not be able to get up one morning for work and realize that I'm not going into work. I've got to face my feelings. I've got to feel this grief that I didn't want to feel. So my relationship with Miguel now is a very different one than what I had before. I am the mom who got him out of the foster care system, and we've been able to stay in contact, and it's been hard. I'm not going to lie. It's been very hard, and there are still levels of grief that will come up at times, like around different milestones. And it's, again, I still come back though to the fact that I am so grateful for that experience. I would not have gone on this journey. I would not be who I am today without Miguel and what I learned about myself as a result of him.
Yeah, sounds like a really lucky kid. I hope he knows it. And yeah, thank you for sharing it. I just feel my heart a ton. And I also am just like, man, thank you to the doctors who eat their feelings and then go save someone's life. Because wow, I don't know that I have the capacity to do that. So thank you for being that kind of amazing healer as well. As I get to know you more, that's one of the things about you as a healer that I am just learning to enjoy is like, you have these hardcore medicine experience, like really hard, like addiction. Okay. All right. No big deal. Yeah. Go out and harvest some organs. Yeah. And then make sure you stay awake and save someone's life with that organ. Okay. Sure. I could see. Let's talk about our feelings. Yeah. Let's feel our bodies, everybody. I just think that range that you experience and you can hold for yourself, for the world, for us in this book is extraordinary. It's remarkable. And so thank you for doing your work to be able to synthesize all this and give us a playbook to, I think, make faster resolution of trauma and faster resolution of issues. It's not just trauma. I think that's the thing that we keep talking about, chicken or egg. You could say, I have migraines, I have IBS, I have whatever, and trauma's involved. You can say, I have depression and anxiety, and it's my trauma, and your physical body's involved. And thank you for writing this book. Is there anything, any last words?
No, I wrote the book. I dedicated it to Miguel and to a few people who modeled for me what safe love was. But really, I wrote the book for the reader. And so this is for you. This is for you and for you to take it as far as you would like, knowing that anything is possible. Anything is possible. And it's a message of hope.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
This has been great.
This has been great. I didn't know what to expect, but I didn't expect this. So thank you.
My pleasure. It's a great book.
Thank you.
I dive into the stress versus trauma distinction in chapter 2 of my book through the story of Claire. When Claire found my biology of trauma practitioner training program, she wasn't looking for trauma healing. In fact, she didn't think that she had experienced trauma. She was looking for help with her fatigue. Claire secretly wondered if she was broken forever. How could someone who understood so much about wellness feel so unwell? She just wanted the fatigue to go away. For all those who order a copy of the book right now on Amazon, remember I am giving you my 5-day nervous system reset, 5 of the somatic exercises that can change everything as you learn to create inner safety. Just go to biologyoftrauma.com/book to order and get the 5-day nervous system reset. And remember that there are deeper experiences with me in the book bundle packages that are available. Now, these are available up until the release of the book on September 22nd. We are just 2 weeks away, so I'd hate for you to miss out on an opportunity simply because life got busy. So I will have the link to that in the show notes. The Guided Seeker Bundle gives you a workbook and a master course to go with the book. The Accelerated Implementer Package is for you if you want to take action and have my support to do. This is a live half-day online group intensive. And then there is the Fast Track Practitioner who, after all of that, you also get 1 day with me in my home to identify your biggest personal block to the next level of healing and regulation. You can approach your healing journey with the right tools and in the right order, tools that work with your biology, not come at a cost to your biology. I'll include other resources in the show notes, including related episodes. Episode 31 would be a good one on, am I tired or is this trauma? Episode 48 was on bracing and hypervigilance. Episode 122 was on the shutdown step of the trauma response, and a YouTube video on the hidden link between autoimmunity, stress, and childhood trauma. I am here to save you time and money by bringing you practical information that will help you accelerate the healing journey. So please take a moment to subscribe and leave a review. Your feedback is how I know how to improve this podcast, bring you great content, and allow others to find the information that could change their lives as well. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. Until next episode, lots of love.